the Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
Change your mind like a girl. Change your clothes.
Is there a chance we could see Mills again?
Something happens to Tyrod, you could see him.
Tyrod's healthy, he's the starter.
He's the starter.
You're looking at Davis Mills, who is coming in quarterback for the Houston Texans. This will be his 7th game this season.
I should know.
I do think it's the right choice for David Culley in this game to go to Davis Mills. You know, just based on the lack of passing production that we've seen from this offense in the last two games.
Tyrod had a wrist. He hyperextended his wrist a little bit, and he wasn't sure he could handle the football.
He's been working through it. He is available to go back into the game, but Culley made an audible, and that's why Davis Mills is now in the game.
Tyrod had a wrist. He hyperextended his wrist a little bit, and he wasn't sure he could handle the football.
Is Tyrod still the starter when he's healthy?
Hey, when you don't score any points in a game, you evaluate everything. You know, I just got to look at Tyrod through their times that he was in there, and then look at Davis while he was in there, and then just see where we need to go from there.
That's the nutshell of what David Culley experienced yesterday. Tyrod Taylor, terrible. And what was a terrible Texans performance, 31-0. First time in Texans history to be shut out at home during the regular season. Fewest points per game in the NFL since 2022. It's the state of the Houston Texans. You know, I was wondering, too, if David Culley would go to Davis Mills in that game. He ended up doing it. He would cite the wrist injury as the reason as to why. Neither guy was very good.
The guy was awful, but no one on the team really was. I mean, the only bright, if you want to say bright, it was a dim flicker of a candle, but the only bright spot would be the fact that Lovie Smith continued to try and do everything he could to try and keep them at least somewhat close in the game. But everything other than that, you know, the question I kept asking myself is this rock bottom or could it get any worse? Because when you hear the numbers that you were just setting out there, and then when you just think about the fact that on a week-in, week-out basis, it's one thing to lose. And I said at the start of the year when we started the whole embrace the suck, look, the one thing we want them to do is be competitive for three and a half quarters, but then find a way somehow at the end of the game to not do something stupid like win it when the best thing for you is to get the best draft picks possible with the highest pick, so therefore you have a bad record. Well, they can't even do that right because they get their doors blown off more than any freaking team I've ever seen. And in the NFL, you're supposed to be able to keep it somewhat close. But when you think about all their losses by double digits and then big double digits, and then, as you mentioned, throw shutouts into the mix, and the way that they're finding new ways to lose and look even worse, is this rock bottom?
It's a good question. Rock bottom. I don't know. I'm not sure. We can get into it a little bit later. How about that first interception that Tyrod Taylor threw, though? Like, he's thrown some interceptions where you're just like,
yeah.
WTF, right? Like, what is going on? He had the one a few weeks ago where he was kind of running out of the pocket, just like flipped it, like trying to throw it away, except he didn't throw it away, and he put it in the range of the defensive back to intercept it. Yesterday's interception was pretty much the same thing. Like, where is he going with that ball? And look, you're right. The whole organization is bad. The offense is very bad. You can't protect for a quarterback. You don't really have any receivers for a quarterback, ball catchers, whether you want to go the tight end position, the receiver pitching position. Rex Burkhead's your best running back at this point. You're not even playing Nico Collins to really where he's getting any sort of experience or developing his career at all. So it's tough to put it like just on a singular quarterback and like this decision. So David Culley go with Tyrod Taylor. He's our starter. He gives us the best chance to win. Should he play the guy that has a chance of being here next year that could potentially be somebody who, you know, plays significant snaps for this franchise going forward? There really isn't a right answer. Like, you can't protect for the guy. He's got no targets. Neither quarterback is very good. So offensively, I mean, you're just as inept as possible.
Well, the other thing is that the one, it seems like they're all checked out. The one guy that's still dialed in was Tyrod Taylor because of the fact that he'd get his head ripped off with the way he was running play to play. But a lot of times, he suddenly thought he was the best version of Pat Mahomes or Deshaun Watson because they would actually try and get something going, and then he would go and try and turn left, then spin right. It looked like he was making like either an NBA move or something on the stage of a ballet. And then he would get crushed by two defensive linemen and lose like 7 to 10 yards. And you're going, what are you doing out there? I understand you're trying. You're trying hard. Maybe you're trying too hard. But no one around you, starting with the offensive line, is even giving the effort necessary to try and slow down a pass rush or any kind of defensive pressures. So at a certain point, yeah, I was thinking the same thing. Davis Mills is going to enter this game. They're not going to do any better because this is an out-and-out disaster all the way across the board. And that's the worst thing about the schedule, Jeremy, increasing to 17 games. It's now longer, and now before we knew this before the actual official word came out after the game that they've been officially eliminated. But once you're officially eliminated with this many games left in the season, but you've also played this bad getting up to this point, no one in that locker room seems like they have 1 ounce of care in their bodies. And even the guys that are trying for jobs for next season know it's going to be done elsewhere. So why the hell should they continue to try and put their body on the line for this team?
Yeah, you don't see that 1-2, aside from like Camus, Grugier, Hill, like other than Hill, and look, that's very nitpicky, but racked together 19 tackles because the Colts ran the ball 117 times, it felt like. I mean, the tackle number is a little inflated whenever the other team runs it 48 times. But yeah, that's kind of where you are right now within the organization, is that the offense looks inept. Like, just some of the numbers. Like, Davis Mills and Tyrod Taylor almost had identical numbers, except Tyrod Taylor threw an interception. They were sacked combined 4 times. It felt like a dozen pressures. The running game, like, you racked up some meaningless numbers where you ran for 84 yards on 19 carries. Your leading carrier was Rex Burkhead, who had 8 carries and 30 yards. It's just a sad state of affairs when you look at the offense. And then before the game, we got another healthy scratch. We got another player out for disciplinary reasons. Zach Cunningham was suspended for the game, basically, because he missed the COVID test. How do you feel about that?
I want to know who did it. At a certain point, what I'm starting to try and like decipher out of all this is who's running the show over there? Because we've already talked about, from a press conference perspective, there's disconnects. David Culley doesn't seem like the guy that's going to be this kind of iron-fisted, you're suspended, you're not going to suit up, you're not going to play. Nick Caserio does. But I think that even there, especially with the state of affairs, we've said, when you're this bad on the field, the last thing you want to do is continue to draw attention to things off the field. There has to be better ways. Sometimes, and I'm not saying lie, but I'm saying sometimes there's ways to spin these things and do these things and handle these things where you just say, he got hurt in pregame. Or we had, you know, there's something came up in pregame, if that's the way you want to do it. But there's also the inconsistencies of one guy suspended or doesn't start and misses the first quarter or the first half. The next guy is the guy that's one of your faces left of your franchise, and he completely is sent packing home in Justin Reed. Now you've got this situation. Evidently, from what you hear, it was because he missed a COVID test the morning of the game. You know what? If you really wanted to, there are ways that you could still get that test administered. Teams would find a way to do whatever was necessary to either cover it up a different way or make an exception. Understand that in private, where they always say, we'll handle those things internally, they'll handle the fact that he missed the initial test. But there's also ways, if it was like, if this was a playoff game, do you think Bill Belichick would do that had playoff ramifications? Do you think the Patriots and Bill Belichick would do that for one of their key players? I've seen it too many times throughout my experiences in pro sports. We know that like players are treated differently depending on how good you are, but if you're a starter for sure, depending on the sport you're playing, teams will go out of their way to make exceptions to make sure you play.
I don't mind suspending Zach Cunningham, in large part because you're 2-10. Like, if you're going to prove a point when you do it, it's whenever you're 2-10. Right now, the Texans are 2-10. Cunningham was a problem earlier this year when he had to sit out a quarter. Look, you're a pro. If you have to be somewhere on time and you're not there, I'll never have a problem with somebody suspending you and having to. And he's a repeat offender, obviously, because he's missed the second game. And like, if you're trying to instill the culture, and look, I'm not trying to advocate for the Texans or be their defender by any stretch of the imagination, but it's very clear that year one for the Houston Texans under Nick Caserio is to build the culture, is to set the standards of this organization. So like, you're not getting anything else, right? You're not winning games. So yeah, continue to be consistent with your standard. And if a pro is late, if Zach Cunningham's late for a COVID test, yes, I don't care.
Here's the problem, though, Jeremy. Zach Cunningham saw a precedent set by Roby. When Roby started acting up, it was to send the message, I don't care how much you're paying me and the fact that I've got a good contract. I don't want to deal with this. Get me out of here. And if you're not going to listen to those requests, then I'm going to be the problem child that makes you want to get rid of me. Zach Cunningham is paid handsomely. He's taken care of, right? But he already knows and has experienced what's going on in those four walls, and he doesn't want any part of it. But he knows his contract says he's there unless something happens. It's obvious by him following kind of the same kind of pattern as Roby that he believes if he keeps doing this, they'll either cut him and release him where he can go anywhere he wants or try and find a trade partner for him so that they can get him out of there. The other thing to your point on culture, I totally get that. The only thing is who on that team is going to be around for year two to actually talk about and live through and understand what that culture is, because most of these guys on this roster are one and done.
Yeah, I mean, Camus, Grugier-Hill, like that's pretty much the answer to everything because he's the guy that's like bought in. No, I agree with you. And that's something that I've been saying for a long time is that like culture is great, but you want to instill the culture with people who are going to be here for a while. And if you go up and down the roster, like even the players that are producing right now for you, you can have the question like, are they going to be here whenever the most optimistic viewpoint you start being a contender again in 3 years? Like Grugier-Hill, 19 tackles, the most tackles in Houston Texan history. He's going to be 30 in 3 years. So that's not even a significant piece. Like, is he going to be your leader of whoever you draft in the first round and second round, third round, whatever you're bringing into the defense? You know, I doubt it. So that's kind of why they're talking out of both sides of their mouths. Like, I understand what they're doing. I believe they've been consistent with their culture. You miss practice. You miss a COVID test. You're not being a pro. Then you're going to be suspended, whether it's a quarter, whether it's a game. They've been consistent in that message. The difficulty is that, one, it's very easy to mock when you're preaching culture and you're 2-10, right? Like, it's very easy from a fan base point of view if you're living in the city of Houston. Oh, we're going to bring in culture. We have a set of standards. This is going to be our first pillar to rebuilding this organization. And then you're 2-10. And then you've scored 0 points at home for the first time in regular season history in the franchise. Then you also have the worst yards per game in the NFL. Then you also have the worst points per game in the NFL since 2012. So it's very difficult to get the buy-in, one, from their fan base, and then two, from the 53 guys. Last week it was Justin Reed. Now it's Zach Cunningham. That buy-in that you want from culture, it's not there 12 games into the season.
No, it's not. And let me ask you a question, because I think this is the way I look at it, too, because, like I said, in my experience in pro sports, if J.J. Watt a year ago missed his COVID test in the morning, do you think that they just say, we're just sitting you down, you're suspended, you're not going to play today? No. The team doctors and otherwise would be on their cell phones and figuring out a way as quick as possible to get that test administered where they're waiting on the results, and even if he has to miss a little bit of game time till the results come in, there's no way they're going to allow him to miss that game because he was that important to that team. That's what you're basically saying. There's no one on this team that's that important.
No.
And we'd rather have another issue to bring attention to off the field that makes us look like what the heck's going on here.
Why do you think they're bringing attention to it, though? Like, do you think that was something that they leaked? Like, obviously, Zach Cunningham's an inactive. That's going to get attention.
I think it's because of Zach Cunningham. And like you said, he's a repeat offender. And maybe they're sending the message more so than missing the test. It's, look, okay, if you want to be the problem child, and you're going to handle it this way, we're going to handle it this way to embarrass you, no matter whether it's here or elsewhere, where you end up, you're not getting out of this thing scot-free. Because a lot of times, too, the team, which the player thinks is for the benefit of the organization, a lot of times they're trying to help the player, too, especially if he's got a long-term contract, of, hey, we don't want this to have a long-lasting effect of a bad apple in the locker room. They'd try to cover it up. But at a certain point, they probably reach a frustration level and go, you know what? Can it get any worse? So we did it with Justin Reed. We'll just spray it out there again and make you realize we're not taking your crap anymore.
Here's what Cully had to say after the game about Zach Cunningham being suspended for the game after missing the COVID test.
We have standards and we got rules, and he wasn't there. And so internally, you know, made the decision.
There you go. Pretty short, pretty sweet. Standards, be on time. Zach Cunningham was not. He's out for disciplinary reasons as the Texans get blown out by the Colts, embarrassed by the Colts, 31-0. You brought up the question, have the Texans reached a new low? Or have they reached the expansion lows of this team? Houston, we want to hear from you, too. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Is this an all-time low for the Houston Texans franchise? That's next. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Have the Texans reached an all-time low? Even the low points of when they were an expansion team in the NFL. We'll get into that in just a second. I want to remind you to get into the Christmas spirit during our 12 Days of Giving, sponsored by Veritex Community Bank. On the first day, we'd like to give back to Star of Hope, a Christ-centered community dedicated to meeting the needs of homeless men, women, and their children. We're encouraging you, our wonderful listeners, to head to ESPN975.com/12days to give. Give what you can. That's ESPN.com/12days to give. Plus, David Gal, CEO of Gal Media, has generously agreed to match donations to each charity up to $500. So head to ESPN.com/12days to make your donation to Star of Hope now. No donation will go unnoticed. Texans need some donating of draft picks. That'd be great, right? I don't believe the Texans are quite to expansion lows yet. Now, I mean this from like a roster perspective. Now, you're talking about the psyche of the city. If you're talking about the mentality of the city, if you're talking about the fandom of the city towards the Houston Texans, I do believe we're at an all-time low. You're getting 50% of capacity. No one's that interested. More people are interested in mocking the Houston Texans than actually praising the Houston Texans. You can get them back, but you got to win. But right now, everybody's mad at the Houston Texans. They're mad that Cal McNair has allowed Jack Easterby to infiltrate this organization. They're mad that they've went from being a winning team to now the laughingstock of the NFL. So there's two ways to look at it. One from the fan perspective and like, the approval rating of the Houston Texans, that's at an all-time low. But this roster, it's not as bad as it was back when you were an expansion team, at least in my opinion.
I don't know, Jeremy. I mean, the thing is that at least through the expansion draft, you had some veterans that it wasn't all you being expected to completely control the locker room, the culture, the narratives on a daily basis. Because through the expansion draft, you had some guys that came, whether Boselli played a game or not, but some of the other guys, was it Gary Weaver?
Weaver?
Yeah.
I don't know if that was his first name, but there was definitely Weaver.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of guys that came over from different situations that were able to police the locker room a little bit for you and make sure that, look, they understood they were an expansion team, but it doesn't mean that they weren't professionals. It doesn't mean that they didn't know how to handle their business on a practice-by-practice and game-by-game basis. I think that Gary Walker, And guys like that, you know, and when they got the expansion draft, they got veterans that came from programs that knew right from wrong. So that from that standpoint, yeah, the roster was bad, but I think you still had a spackling of veterans within the culture that allowed you to keep going in the right direction with the understanding that, look, this is what you're supposed to do as an expansion team. You're not supposed to do these kind of things when you're in whatever year you're in as the Houston Texans. And when you had the team that you had, when you had just a few short years ago, Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt and all the different guys that helped you be on the cusp of getting to your first ever AFC championship game. But now from where they've been to how quickly they've gotten to where they've gotten, I truly believe they're rock bottom. Because here's the other thing. We're talking about it all from a football perspective. From a business perspective, and this was well before Cal took over for his dad when his dad RIP passed, there was the belief amongst all NFL owners, once you get into that fraternity, you can't lose. You can't lose money. That waiting list is never going to go away. They're never going to stop buying gear. They're never going to stop believing in your team every single day, no matter how tough the losses are or how few the wins become. Now, they're experiencing like their worst nightmare all right in front of them because the waiting list is gone. The people on that are trying even to buy tickets just to be there, just to have a chance to go to games is gone, as we saw again yesterday. The tailgating, as Jake has talked about, the other team's getting more tailgaters than they are. And used to be that was the deal before the deal. You got to be a part of the tailgating experience. All these different things, the merchandise is way down. All these things is like the one thing that the organization believed could never happen to them as an NFL ownership group.
All good points, and that to me is why you have to have two different angles, right? From like a business perspective, from a dollars and cents perspective, this is an all-time low. Because even whenever you're an expansion team, you were excited about having football back in Houston. You were excited about the rebuild. This has been a colossal fell and a colossal fall from where you were that you know, the public PR and the dollars that are being spent on this team are going way down. You're losing season ticket holders. You're losing fan interest. So, yeah, from a business side, there's no doubt that this is an all-time low. In terms of your roster, while you had pros and, like, the production that they put on the field in 2002 maybe is better than the production that they're currently putting on the field in 2021. Like, that team won four games, for goodness sakes. I still believe you have more talent on this roster. And it's not, in my opinion, talent that's going to help you win games. But it's talent that Nick Caserio has to hopefully trade in the offseason, right? You have a Laremy Tunsil where you think you can get some return for. You have Brandon Cooks who you think you can get some return for. And the conversation might end there. Like, what other players have trade value that you could trade away in the offseason that are going to bring out a decent, you know, trade package in return? Now, Deshaun Watson's the other obvious name there. But you still have a little bit at your disposal that you can trade away that can bring back draft picks, which you didn't have the luxury of in 2002. But you know my favorite part of Sunday? My favorite part of Sunday is when the clock strikes zero in a Houston Texans game. That way my focus can go away from the Houston Texans. And I very much feel like the city is looking forward to the clock striking zero in the final game of the regular season. And even like for both parties, whether it's the pessimist, whether it's the optimist, because the pessimists are just going to be happy that it's over, right? They're going to be happy that the Houston Texans in 2021, laughing stock in the NFL is done. And then the other half where you have the optimists are going to be happy that Nick Caserio can finally go to work. Because he can't go to work right now.
You're
like
right.
The first day of the offseason for the optimist, like hope springs eternal on day one of the offseason coming up this year.
See, but Jeremy, I see it differently. The emotions of the relief of the season's finally over, we finally put that behind us, are replaced almost immediately and instantaneously by anxiety and fear of just what you just said.
There's definitely going
to
be that.
Because now that you can relax and say there's no more Sundays to have to worry about, you know, taking it in the shorts and being the laughing stock. But then, oh, wait a minute. This could be the first year that we get a full complement of draft picks, but it's Nick Caserio, and everything he's shown us has been really less than stellar and inconsistent in terms of how he handles player personnel, player development, and drafts. And that was without a first or second round pick. So now there's a fear factor of, hey, they did everything right on the field to set you up for success starting this offseason, but do I really have the right guy and his personnel in place so that I can feel comfortable knowing he's going to make the right moves to do what he's supposed to do?
If I were to rank things that Nick Caserio's like his power rankings of skill, I'd say the very top of the top of the list is talking a good game. He can talk a good game with the best of them. I'm willing to admit that. Talking a good game can be scary though, because he's just selling you something, right? Mm-hmm. I don't hate the draft that he had this past season. Like you can point at Davis Mills and say, well, that was your first draft pick that you ever had as a GM. I don't care if you're going to roll the dice on a quarterback in the third round. I hope Nick Caserio continues to roll dice on quarterbacks in the third round. Is it too early to call Davis Mills a failure? Maybe, maybe not. I don't like him. I don't see that he has much of a future in the NFL, but I'm also okay with the risk of drafting a quarterback in the third round. Nico Collins looked like he's somebody that can help you. He was drafted in the middle rounds. Brevin Jordan's looking like somebody that can help you. Roy Lopez was an absolute steal in the sixth round. Nick Caserio, from what I've seen as a Houston Texan general manager, the second best thing that he has done to this point is draft. I think that the draft that he just had is a slight win. Now, a lot of it's third round through seventh round, so that's really hard to like value what that means going forward. And then the trades that he's made make absolutely no sense either. Giving away tons of draft picks after you basically praise a guy for making good draft picks in the later rounds. So that fear is always going to be there from Houston Texans' perspective, because you've lived some very bad drafts, whether it's Bill O'Brien running the draft board, whether it was Brian Gain running a draft board. I was looking at one today. Because Hunter Renfro went nuts yesterday. Hunter Renfro looks like he's going to be he already is a really good player in the NFL. He was a fifth rounder to Oakland at the time, now Las Vegas. Do you know what the Texans drafted in the third round that year? Cahali Waring. Mm. Like, not every pick's going to be a win, right? But you want to see a few of those.
Look at the opposing backfield yesterday. No, you could have had Jonathan Taylor for your rebuild and had a go-to every down back.
I hate having these conversations, though, because like it's revisionist history, and it's also not the current GM. But it's also fair to point out that whenever you miss like that over and over and over, it's going to condition your fan base, even if it's a different general manager, that you're going to miss in every single draft.
See, here's the thing, and I'll give him a pass for the draft. I don't like him trading up when you don't have a pick till the third round and doing some of the things that he did. But he did actually, by the standards of seeing guys get on the playing field and be productive, make some picks in which you at least hold out some hope. But the reservation goes to what else you said about judging him in his first year, all the bad trades he's made. Because part of what we've been talking about is the reason why you want to be at the top of every round of the draft is whether you use that pick right where it stands because there's that player you have to have in the position that you need, or it's you do what Belichick has done for years, trade down to get the most by moving down a few spots to help out another team but really benefit you with assets in the process. That would worry me. Is he going to get enough, and is he going to do it the right way when he has to make those trades?
I would, just to play devil's advocate here.
Yep.
If you have a third rounder and later, like you're not going to get great return for trading down. Like you can get some. But you're the most you can get, the most where you can maximize value and maximize capital in terms of draft picks return is a first and second. And that's why I don't think it's really fair to grade Nick Caserio to this point. And again, I like the draft. I hate the free agent acquisitions. I hate the trades that Nick Caserio has made, but still a very small sample, I think, of what he's going to be as a general manager. But you're right. The previous draft histories the Texans have had, that has a negative conditioning to the Houston Texans fan base. 713-780-ESPN. A little bit later on, you might have seen this fan go viral. He had the sign outside of Cal McNair's suites where it had said, "Hey, Tommy boy, Cal, sell the team. Hey, Cal, the fans care. Do you care?" He got escorted out of the section, maybe out of the stadium. He's going to be joining us at 1:15, so make sure that you don't miss that. Little Ronsta at Ronnie B 832, the Texan fan that went viral for yelling at Cal McNair to sell the team yesterday, will be joining us at 1:15. But coming up next, Tim Brando of Fox Sports. He had some thoughts about the college football playoff. He joins us next on the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about new brakes, because let me tell you something. This is the simplest, easiest way to get your brakes fixed every time and do it the right way. They're skilled brake technicians. All they do, certified, fix brakes. They come to you to do what they do. It's simple. You can go to brake shops across this town. You're going to be at the mercy of a mechanic that will take as much time as he needs to do whatever he feels like he's got to do, like answering text messages and drinking coffee, fixing your car, and getting to whatever else he wants to get done. Doesn't care what you have to do in a day. New Brakes decided to do it a different way. Instead of sitting in those seedy waiting rooms with all the bad cold coffee, television shows, and vending machines, you do what you do. You want to do it while you're at work? They come to you like they did for me. I was doing a radio show. They were in the parking garage. In 40 minutes or less, they did my brakes, did a phenomenal job. Price is competitive with any brake shop in town, and it saves me so much time. Therefore, you're saving time, which is saving money, which is the way things are done these days. Why do you think there's curbside pickup for groceries so you don't have to spend an hour in the grocery store? The same way there's new brakes when you want to fix your brakes. Go to nubrakes.com. Mention ESPN 97.5, save 10%. More so than that, know you're going to save time, which saves money, and you're doing it with a place that myself and all of the listeners that have followed my lead have told me has been just a painless and phenomenal experience. Check them out today. nubrakes.com. That's nubrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Go straight out to the HRP guest line. We're joining us now. Icon in the college football game, icon of sports. Tim Brando of Fox Sports is joining us. Tim, college football playoff is out. Bama 1, Michigan 2, Georgia 3, Cincinnati 4. Do you feel like the committee got it right?
Oh, yeah. I think the four teams are the four teams. They certainly got it right based on what happened over the weekend. Yeah, that part they got right. I have a little... I have some issues with the order, the seating, but the right four teams, absolutely.
What are the issues you have with the order?
Well, I think Cincinnati shouldn't be number four. They're 13-0. I mean, what more can you do? So, but they were not going to put Cincinnati four. As a matter of fact, they weren't going to put them anywhere but four. And that's why I picked them four, by the way, at the start of the year in my original top 10 back in July. Because they are, you know, they're outside the realm. You know, they wouldn't have even made it if Oklahoma State had won. I can just tell by, you know, the metrics that they use, that had Oklahoma State beaten Baylor, that a 12-1 Power 5 team would have gotten in over them, despite what they did to Houston. And, you know, Houston was ranked where? And when did they finally crack the top 25? That was by design, too. So... Listen, you know, I'm splitting hairs to some extent, yes, but I'm telling you that even though the committee got it right with the four teams, doesn't mean that it's not a flawed process, that it's not corrupt, because it is. And playing these games on New Year's Eve, how smart is that? Didn't we learn from before how poorly rated those games were when they had it on New Year's Eve? And that's all because college football can't deal with the antiquated system with their bowls that allows the Rose Bowl to play on New Year's Day at that certain time of day, and the Sugar Bowl to play when they need to play at a certain time of day with separate television contracts. I mean, college football just is still very messed up, no question, on a lot of different fronts. It's not, you know, young people want to be out and about on New Year's Eve. Am I right? I'm 65, but I'm young at heart. You know, I don't think that I really, you know, to think that you're going to change the paradigm of viewer habits because we're college football, I mean, how arrogant is that?
Well, and Tim, it's funny because it seems like we continually go back to this. Look, we went from BCS where it was all numbers driven to now all the biases that go with what we've seen with the college football playoffs and these ridiculous interviews right out of a ballroom in a hotel in which people are telling you, even though when teams play head to head, that doesn't matter. It's the eye test of what they see on the rosters. And then they see, like you said, the way they've seeded this whole thing. What the solution isn't going to be 8 teams or 12 teams. It's not going to be until they really take into consideration exactly how they got it right. And I think it was almost fluky to go to 64 and 68 teams with basketball, but they take the broadcasting element into consideration. They take scheduling into consideration so they can maximize viewership, attendance, and getting all the schools in that need to be in. How do they, I mean, what's your solution? It can't be just 8 or 12 teams, right?
Well, no, the 12 teams is really good. 12 teams is really good. It would enhance not just the postseason, which is in my view flawed and corrupt because of the way the politics and layers of bureaucracy handle this within the framework of college football. But also, it's exclusionary. It still remains exclusionary. Now, they can all jump up and down and say, look what we did for poor little Cincinnati. We finally let a group of 5 team in. But that's just part of it. And they wouldn't have done it if Oklahoma State could have gotten an extra half yard and Sanders and the kid that was the running back, if he had hit the pylon and Oklahoma State had won that game, they would have been in. That's what I'm telling you, okay? If you had 12 teams, now you get all of the country's geography involved. And you've got the top 4 teams do get something for being in the top 4. They get a bye week. And then you allow campuses to have the first round of games. And games that are being played in mid-November between teams ranked anywhere between, say, number 15 and 22 all matter even more. Conference championships all matter even more. Anything that allows the college football postseason to not include someone saying, okay, in an interview with Reese Davis, well, the committee thought, okay, that's good for college football. We need to get rid of that. Let people earn the right on the field to get in.
Yeah, I'm with
which
you.
We can do when we have 12 teams. If you allow 4 teams that have great seasons in the regular year and they win championships, those championships matter. You put them in. Then you have at-large berths for those that did not win their conference championships, and they have to perform to a high level to get in. At that point, there's nothing wrong with using computers, and there's also nothing wrong with having a committee. But I don't want them in charge of picking everything. You know, the committee can help on the fringe area, but we don't need the committee to be the all-powerful, you know, Oz, 13 members of a committee that all claim to be Oz. We don't need that. There's just a lot to be done, fellas. Well,
That's where they lost me, Tim, because it was one thing when a head-to-head happened less than 2 weeks from the standpoint that they ranked the losing team higher. But then you go and say when Brian Kelly leaves Notre Dame, well, we can factor in the fact that when a coach leaves a program, we can penalize them. Yeah. But then Alabama loses one of their best players at wide receiver, and they don't get punished. They get all the way to number one when an argument could have been made for Michigan.
Yeah, no question. I you know, here's what happened there, though. The gerrymandering process was this, okay? I can take you within the bowels of, you know, that hotel in Texas and tell you that they said, hey, man, we cannot put Georgia and Alabama against each other, you know, for their next game. We just can't do that. We cannot do that. And yet, okay, to show you the difference with how the bureaucrats handle football versus basketball, in the NCAA tournament, there are bylaws written that state when a certain conference has, you know, 10 teams in, like the Big Ten 1 year or the Big East 1 year, we have to put the format together so that the two teams within the same conference cannot meet one another until there are no other options within that specific region, meaning they can't play one another until the regional finals. We will slot that accordingly. We will keep them apart. Okay, well, that's going to happen in basketball, whereas within football, they will do everything in their to make sure that we get an all-SEC final. That's what the thinking is. Trust me, they're not thinking, somewhat implied today that happens to be in media, okay, or actually Athletic, you said, well, you can bet that the committee is banking on and hoping for, or that maybe ESPN is hoping for a Michigan-Georgia final. Okay, fine. Those would be two huge markets. And if it, by the way, happened to be an Alabama-Michigan final, that would be great. I mean, excuse me, it would be Alabama-Michigan. That's what they want because Georgia plays Michigan coming in. Those would be two great ratings games. But college football should be above that. It should be more like the Super Bowl, where we are not dependent on teams and market sizes and followings. You know, we should be really trying to get, you know, the best matchups. That's what we should be all about. And, look, they did everything they could to keep Cincinnati out of it. And by ranking them four and making sure that they play Alabama one, they think they've done that now. That we have to put up with them once. We're not going to make it. We don't want to have to put up with them twice. So this is what we're going to do. I think that gerrymandering process takes place. And I know that takes place. And until such time as they allow for transparency, and before that last particular poll comes out, the last standings are announced, until they let live microphones go in there so we can see and hear exactly what's transpiring, I believe it's corrupt, absolutely corrupt.
Tim Brando of Fox Sports, our guest on the HRMP guest line. I echo a lot of the same sentiments that you've brought up, Tim. And you mentioned a couple of things that you would change in college football, but you said there's a lot that they could change. What are some other things that you think would be good for the game?
We need unified leadership. We need a czar. We need the conference commissioners need to meet, and I mean all of them, not just the Power Five, but the Group of Five needs its representation, too. And they need to, for a period of every 5 years, have an anointed czar, someone that is looking out for the best interest of all of college football, not just their leagues. The conference commissioners are only taking care of their constituencies, nothing more, nothing less. That's all they care about. And college football needs unified direction. We need so many different changes to take place. If we had just had NIL to deal with this year, okay, by example, if we had just had NIL to deal with this year, it would have been hard on a lot of people. If we just had realignment to deal with this year, it would have been, and I think definitely was, impactful. The reason, and that's why we don't have expansion now, is because of the way the SEC went in and poached those two teams out of the Big 12, while the two conference commissioners, two of the four people that were on the committee for expansion and worked on it for 2 years, Bob Bowlesby, Greg Sankey, Thompson from the Mountain West Conference, and Jack Swarbrick were the four men. They were going over that for 2.5 years, all the while the commissioner of the SEC was working towards poaching two teams from Bowlesby's conference. Okay? That was so mind-blowing that a cease and desist letter was written by the conference commissioner of the Big 12 to ESPN. I mean, that was an embarrassment, okay? That can't happen. Well, the reason why we're not going to 12 right away is because the other commissioners are saying, well, now we know what the SEC was trying to do. They wanted to get Oklahoma and Texas to get more brand names so they could fill their coffers with four teams going into a 12-team playoff. So we're not going to have that happen until these television deals are done. That's why this stalemate is underway, all right? If all we had to deal with was the signing day, okay, the early signing period on December the 15th, which is the reason why these coaches are bolting for greener pastures to such a point that fans, players, some in the media are going, how dare they do this while talking about players being loyal and players being the kind of kids that see everything to its end, not quitting on its team and not going into the transfer portal. Okay. Well, that's happening for a reason. I mean, the head coaches of these college football programs are not responsible for that date being December the 15th. But they are going to react to that date being December the 15th. And that's why you saw what happened at USC and you saw what happened at LSU and the impact that it had on both Notre Dame and Oklahoma. We need to get rid of that kind of crap. Somebody's got to say, enough already. We're making ourselves into a national joke, a national punchline. Why go there? Why set yourself up for such bad press? They need to take a little look over at the people in New York and how they protect their shield in the NFL. Because they do. They go out of their way to remove the veil of impropriety away from everything. Even when we know there's sometimes improprieties in pro football, they do everything they can to remove the veil of that. College football makes every one of its national mistakes so easy to lampoon for everyone in media. It's a shame. But unless you have unified leadership and someone that says to the conference commissioners, hey, fellas, we need to get together and make sure these kinds of things don't happen. And I think that's a long way off. It may happen in your lifetime. I don't think it'll happen.
Tim, great stuff. Appreciate you taking the time and look forward to chatting again in the future.
You bet. Always good to be with you. Thank you.
Tim Brando of Fox Sports. Boy, he had some interesting things to say. Called the college football system flawed and corrupt. Is he right? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
This is ESPN 97.5. Real fun sports. Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Well, Tim Brando went scorched to earth on the inside of NCAA, didn't it? Flawed, corrupt. Look, those are things I've said for a while. Like, if you looked at the college football committee and a couple of the examples that he brought up, Cincinnati was never going to go higher than number four.
Right.
He said that if Oklahoma State would have beaten Baylor and Oklahoma State came, was it about 6 inches short of reaching the pylon?
Less than that.
Winning the Big 12 title game. Congratulations to the Baylor Bears. That was great to see. That Oklahoma State would have been in ahead of Cincinnati. Do you believe that to be true?
I believe it's a possibility. I don't think it would have been true. I think that they would have caught so much backlash that as much as they would have wanted to put Oklahoma State in, you can't completely turn the other cheek to an undefeated team. You can't, and because they had set it up to where, again, you and I have talked about this, that we both agreed, look, they were keeping Houston down as long as they possibly could, but and were nursing him around as a pawn to try and manipulate the top the way they wanted to do it. But because of the fact that everything happened and they knew that if they did it and after all the other things that they did leading up to it, that they would have so much backlash and egg on their face, they couldn't have risked it. I don't think, like Tim does, that if Oklahoma State wins, they get in. But it would have made food for fodder for a whole lot of discussions on sports talk shows.
It was interesting because being in the Cincinnati press box as that game was going on, you could tell that there was definitely a sense that everybody was rooting for Baylor. And whenever Baylor got the stop, there was pretty much a loud roar inside the press box, which is not supposed to be an area where you root. But that was
not.
they were very happy whenever Baylor won that game against Oklahoma State. You know how much, like, if Oklahoma State wins that game and then they jump Cincinnati, if Cincinnati finishes undefeated, That the committee would be talking out of both sides of their mouths again, right? Because if you have to consider every single thing, if you have to consider the fact that Notre Dame lost their head coach and he might affect the ranking of Notre Dame, why wouldn't Oklahoma State beating Baylor with the backup quarterback and freshman Blake Shapen, how come that wouldn't have come into play?
Yeah, I mean, you and I and Brendan were having this conversation via text when I said, it's so flawed in so many ways, but that's why I threw it to Tim, too. When Michi goes down and you know it's an ACL and he's one of the reasons why Young's able to sling it all over the field and they were able to absolutely dominate Georgia and their all-world defense, but suddenly he tears an ACL, he's done for the rest of the year, that doesn't affect you and, matter of fact, catapults Alabama all the way to number one regardless if he's playing or not, which is going to be a big factor because now you can double on the other receiver, play defense a whole lot differently, but yet you can sit there and play, you know, gut feelings and personal biases all along the way and feel like, hey, it's only when it's appropriate for us to make the Final Four the way we want it.
The pushback that I have with Mitchie being out for Alabama, though, is they beat Georgia, the number one team in the country, by 17. And, I mean, they played in the second half without him and still scored 17 points. So, I mean, that's hard to give that, like, the proper value, I guess, after they embarrassed the number one team in the country, you know? Like, the fact that they had such a good showing, which, by the way, that came out of nowhere, huh? Like, who would have thought Alabama would have just rolled by Georgia? And this was to Brendan's point that he made last week, talking about the college football playoff and Georgia's, like, the dominant number one. And he said, look, Georgia hasn't beaten anybody this year that would be even remotely close to an expanded playoff. Why is everybody crowning the Bulldogs? And then Alabama rolled into the SEC championship game and flat out blew them out.
I picked Alabama.
To win it? No, you picked this. Did you win it outright?
I picked Alabama. I don't remember if I picked them outright or not, but I thought they had a feeling, I had a gut feeling they could win the game, and that's why I thought, nonetheless, I figured they'd cover the spread. But that was also partly because of as good as Georgia's defense has been, and they had multiple quarterbacks and all the things they've done, and they really hadn't played anybody per se to where it really, you know, set you back and go, whoa. There was a chance. I didn't expect to see a game like that. I didn't see where, you know, we've talked about the parity in college football. It also goes all the way over to the Heisman Trophy. Well, there was so much parity in the Heisman Trophy. Before this last weekend, you could have had four, five, six guys that you would have said had a legitimate chance to win that trophy at the end of the year. And now it's so cut and dried, set in stone in Bryce Young, that you can't – what he did to that defense and the way he did it on the biggest stage so far this season, you're like – oh, my God, that was impressive.
It was. Michigan impressive with what they did against Iowa, too, 42-3. Wolverines looked very good. And then Houston gave Cincinnati a fight for a while. It was 14-13 at the half, and then Houston with just a third quarter to forget. Cincinnati outscoring the Cougars 21-0 in the third. And Cougars got a touchdown there in the fourth, 35-20 the final. Congratulations to the Bearcats. I hope they win the national championship. I really do.
Were they nice to you at least as a fan base, even though
Oh, no.
They're really bad?
Of course. I mean, I don't blame them either. It was an electric atmosphere. There wasn't a seat in the house.
That pass interference call on fourth down, and I know obviously the way the final score reads, wasn't a factor. That at the time really got me fired up. I was like, that is a game changer in momentum, and the fact that no points on the board, they ended up scoring a touchdown instead, and Houston would have had the ball with a chance to take that one really got under my skin.
That series of plays there, because you had that fourth and I forget the down and distance, but it was fourth down. They went for it, fourth and like three or four. You had the pass interference. I never saw the replay on it. Did you think it was PI or not?
Yeah, and even the guys in the booth were like, that's a no call.
You didn't think it was?
I did not.
And then you had the interception on a heck of a play by that linebacker, kind of dropping back. Never saw him. It was a tough pass to intercept. He picked it off. Cincinnati's a good team. They're underdogs by, I think, 13.5 points against Alabama. I hope that they win the national championship.
They got a chance. You saw them play in person.
I do. I mean, I haven't seen Alabama play in person, though, so it's hard to say. But, yeah, I mean, Cincinnati's more talented than people think. Cincinnati's got a bunch of good players. A couple other things that Tim Brando had to say. Said that he would like to see a college football czar. Why isn't there one, by the way? Like, football is big business.
For years, college basketball had Dave Gavitt. Dave Gavitt, the longtime Big East commissioner. The Gavitt games kind of took over, and he was like the czar that had a NBA to USA basketball. Jerry Colangelo has always been kind of the czar, the guy that takes ownership and bands them together, that takes the competition committee. Yeah, why doesn't college football have someone like that?
Mark Emmert's the NCAA president, but the NCAA doesn't have any control over the bowl games, and they don't have any control over the playoffs.
And if he's associated with those letters, no one respects him.
No, and college football is the only sport, at least at the football bowl subdivision, in which they control their own postseason. NCAA controls everything else in football. They control basketball, baseball, every other sport. They just don't control the football postseason. So, yeah, I think that they should use a czar. Batman texting in at 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776, says it's all arbitrary no matter how many teams you put in, talking about the expanded playoff. The difference that you have, though, once you expand the playoff to 8 or what it seems is inevitable that it's going to be to a 12-game playoff, is that at least it becomes arbitrary after you already have the qualifications that are in place. Power 5 champions, one group of 5 champions, those are your 6 teams. That's your foundation. Then you have, like, the people in the room. Then you have the computers where they might come down to the final 6 wildcard teams. But at that point, if you're left out, if you're the 7th team, the 8th team, that's right on the cusp, but you're the first team out, you know you have to blame? You can't point to the committee. You might point to the committee and complain and cry or do whatever the case may be. But if I'm the committee, I say right back to them, well, you should have won your conference. That's something that does not happen right now, that does in every other sport, and I cannot wait for a 12-team playoff. Like, I finally cannot wait. It's on the horizon. It's so close. Get me there in 2024, please.
But again, when we get going back to this goes all the way back to the Czar comment, though, Jeremy. And I'm trying to think, like, is there a longtime broadcaster? And sure, they got their start in college football as, like, someone that's coached. But we don't want to bias to a conference and toward the Power Five, but also understands the broadcast element. Because the other good point that Tim Brando brought up, and sometimes it gets lost because hello could be a half hour with Tim with his answers because he was so passionate. But the thing is that there's no one making common sense decisions for the betterment of everyone, which is the money and the dollars that make sense when it comes to television, ratings, game dates, things like that. He made a valid point about New Year's Eve when everybody's out and about. You'd like to celebrate on New Year's Eve as an event and still know that in the next coming days, I have a couple days where I'm going to spend watching college football before I watch pro football, before that extended holiday weekend gives me all these different viewing pleasures. Instead, they do it and it takes money out of their pocket. And it's also going to, it's not only going to affect television ratings, it's going to affect attendance and people traveling and all these other things because they make plans for New Year's Eve and they're going to be at certain places. They bought tickets in advance. You need someone that gets to put it all together from a broadcasting element, from the school's perspective, from ticket sales, from all the from revenue generating, from merchandise and other things. Someone that gets it. Right now, we know the NCAA doesn't get it. No matter who you put into that position, if they have any ties to the NCAA, will not be respected. If you put people like we've seen from the Big Ten or, God forbid, the SEC or one of the Power Fives, and you have committees involved, it's not going to be respected, especially after the farce of this year. How can you get that fine mixture of all of it so that it's not just as simple as we're going to 12 teams? It's got to be more to it so that there's more thought put into it so that everybody gets more out of it.
First family of football. Just put the Mannings in charge. I don't even care which one. I don't care if it's Archie. I don't care if it's Peyton. Cooper. I don't care if it's Eli. I don't care if it's Cooper. What's the new one? Arch? Is Arch the
Arch
young
is the quarterback.
Quarterback? He's Cooper's son. Yeah. That's supposed to be really good. Make him the czar of the NCAA. Make them first football, the first family of football, the Manning family. Put them in charge of college football. 713-780-ESPN. How would you change the game? 713-780-3776. What would be your changes in college football? When we return, a blowout that the Houston Texans suffered at home yesterday at the hands of the Colts. That's okay. It's Christmas season. And coming up next, our fourth day of Texans Christmas. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about Apollo Men's Health. We're there broadcasting live on Friday. And HIPAA laws don't allow me to tell you about all the different people that were getting the services at Apollo Men's Health. But let me tell you, every time we talk about them, people come and see Doc O and his staff because they know that they get results. The latest and greatest in HGH peptide therapy has people that have injuries like shoulders and knees and other achy joints recovering quicker and sometimes healing faster because of the fact that when administered by a doctor like Dr. O, it can help you. You want to lose weight, they'll put you on a program. You want all that energy back in your life that you've been lacking, they can help you there too with HGH starting with a full body composition analysis that you can chart weekly, but then getting into hormone therapy for men and women to give you that extra boost of energy in your life. B12 shot like I get every week, it's going to give you energy and it's going to be starting the process of taking better care of yourself. Your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, if you have problems and questions, they have answers. It starts with you making your first appointment at Apollo Men's Health. Go to apollomh.com. Book that first appointment. You'll find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders, and then let the process go from there. They're going to ask you tough questions. Be honest with your answers. They'll get you on a program that gets you results. They're good people doing great things on a daily basis. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.